Welcome to the program for Tuesday, January 24th, 2012, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The 3 o'clock hour on Tuesdays is when we take you inside the executive suite, where decision makers in the federal government talk about the decisions that they're making, the ways that they're making those decisions, and sometimes opportunities for industry to partner on the execution of those decisions. And throughout the month of January, we've been looking at the results of our 2012 priorities survey series. We've been asking C-level executives in the federal government to respond to our surveys about the priorities that they're dealing with this year. And in this week, our focus is on the chief financial officer community. I'm pleased to welcome to Federal News Radio today Jim Taylor, the chief financial officer at the Department of Labor. It's great to see you. Thanks for being here today, Jim.
Great to be here. Thanks, Francis.
And joining me in the questioning and the conversation today is my colleague Jason Miller, the executive editor at Federal News Radio and the force behind our survey series.
I'm pleased you remembered me this time.
I never forget you.
Well, I'm not forgettable.
That's not true. I have forgotten you on occasion. But,
well deserved, though.
A story for another day. Before we bring Jim in on this, Jason, let me just ask you, what was the driver behind the survey series?
It was interesting. I was actually telling Jim before we got on the air a little bit. I said, you had said, hey, I'm thinking about, you saw a survey somewhere else, and you said, hey, I'm thinking about maybe talking to a CIO about a survey. And I think, so, well, why don't we do our own survey? And then it basically blew up from there. We came up with a set of questions, and we had great help from your producer, Emily Jarvis, and you came up with questions, and I came up with questions, and Emily Kopp, our reporter that does workforce, came up with questions, and we just sent them out to a bunch of C-level. We've had last week was the CIO with Simone Zickman from Commerce. Mm-hmm. Week before that was the Chief Acquisition Officers with Dan Gordon, former OFPP Administrator. And early in December, we had Catherine Medina, the Executive Director of the CHICO, or Chief Human Capital Officers Council, to talk all different issues. And I think what this has given us is really twofold, and we have everything up on federalnewsradio.com for people to find it themselves. We make it easy on you. That there's an overall, there's definitely some trends that CIOs, CFOs, CIOs, CAOs, CHCOs are facing. And it's not just all budget or not just administration priorities, but it seems like there's a lot of people heading down the same path. And I think that's a good sign. It's not everyone's in divergent directions. And, there was a lot of concern when the Obama administration came in that would be very similar to the Clinton administration. And, Jim, I know you remember that back in the day, that with 1,000 flowers bloom, everyone just kind of goes off on
their own thing. Yeah.
And there was some concern, what about the pushback from the Bush administration, which was very top-down heavy, do what we say and how we do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's good to see that, yeah, there's definitely some room for innovation, but people are still heading down, I think, a very similar path across these C-level executives. I mean, Jim, just from your perspective, is in the CFO community, obviously, do you feel that way, that people seem to be, there's maybe a wide path, but everyone's heading down it?
Absolutely. I think from all the CFOs and from those that we work with at the White House, including the president, I think that everybody's cognizant of the problems we have. I don't think there's anything new here. I think that the community has worked really well together. I think that there's a lot of desire on the part of the administration to find out what the issues are, find out what works. I mean, the president's charge to us is to create a government that works. And you see that from his initiatives to do the reorganizing of the government. You see that from his statements that he will take cuts in programs he'd prefer not to take cuts in, if that's what it takes to give us a government that works and to reduce the deficit.
Jason talked about the divergence of views of the last couple administrations. What does it look like finding that balance between the top-down and the 1,000 flowers bloom that we seem to be seeing and finding in the results of these surveys?
Well, I think a lot of it is time. I think a lot of it is, I've been doing this for almost 32 years now in the CFO community largely, some in the IG community, or the dark side, as I like to say. But there's over time, there's a realization that this is for real, mm-hmm. and that there's no single silver bullet that's going to solve the problem, that there's a lot of hard decisions that need to be made. And I think that the CFO community, as the CFO Act has matured and the individuals who are in these CFO jobs have taken the boardroom instead of the backroom chairs, are playing a critical role in trying to decide what makes sense going forward and how to be more efficient and what things just simply don't work. I think there's been other takes on this, But I really do think that that maturity model has gotten to a point where everybody is pulling in the same direction.
I got to say, I'm a little surprised that you bring up the whole backroom boardroom thing, because if you talk to CIOs, they'll tell you, we're still trying to get out of the back room and to hear it. And it's always the CFO's fault. They're not letting us out.
Mm-hmm.
So I find that really interesting. The other thing we were talking again before the show started, we were talking a little bit about moving from the CFOs are moving from that controller to the more of a private sector model for CFOs. Talk a little bit about that change.
Sure. I mean, when the CFO Act was passed, I mean, the whole history of that was the need to get financial information and financial systems in place and internal controls in place that you can count on. And there'd been stops and starts over this. And Charles Boucher back in 85 started that whole initiative with a report that he put out. And it took until 1990 to get the CFO Act passed. Those of us in the community never thought that would happen, because that was basically ceding control that had been divided up into a central location, legislatively as well as in the executive branch. And so it really brought to the fold an expert, a so-called expert, who is supposed to be the one who is responsible for financial activities. For all that information that's going out and all this plethora of websites, there's one person who's responsible for that financial information. That's the CFO. When we saw that pass, the initiative then was get clean audit opinions. The way to demonstrate that we have financial control is to get financial audit opinions, get clean opinions. Mm-hmm. And so we all focused on that. And as a result, we ended up purchasing financial management systems, which is a whole separate discussion, I think. And trying to put procedures and internal controls in place so that we could get clean audits. And the vast majority in cases, it has been very, very successful. And so as you saw that going on, you then, and that success rising, the model changed from the controller model to more of the private sector, similar to the private sector model. I mean, the audit opinions have always been based on the audit process in the government. It's always been based on the private sector model. Now you see the CFO's role being based more and more on the private sector model. And the mm-hmm. private sector, they're not accountants. And now you look around the CFO community, you see very few CPAs. You see economists. Mm-hmm. You see nuclear physicists. In one case, you have an acting CFO who's a wildlife manager. That's that person's background.
Mm-hmm.
But because they came up from the program areas, and that's fine, because that's how it happens in the private sector as well. So it's a broader role. It's more than just identifying the debits and credits. That's a critical function.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also trying to figure out risk management, how to figure out what programs are cost-effective, and also working with the programs on internal controls. Those things and a lot of other administrative functions that a lot of CFOs have. But those are the roles now you see more and more. And budget's always been primo. It's always going to be number one, because that's where we live and die. But you see these other needs coming into play, far more than just simply adding up the debits and credits.
You mentioned that there are hard decisions coming, and that's the 800-pound gorilla in the room. In all of these conversations about budgets and financial management, do you get a sense across the agencies through your colleagues and the other folks that you talk to in government that there is maybe not an appetite to do that, but at least a willingness to tackle it? Because there's been a little bit of hesitation, it seems, maybe over the past several years. And I wonder if you think we're finally getting to the point where people not only know that it's for real, as you say, but are ready to give it a shot.
Yeah, the thing I find interesting, and I think about when we talk about those kinds of things, is the OPM surveys that come out every year. And in those OPM surveys, they measure all kinds of things, and the departments are ranked great places to work, not great places to work. However, one thing you always see incredibly strong measurements are, or positive measurements on, and that is on sense of mission. So in all these agencies, and I've been around a number of them over the years, and all these agencies I've ever worked, the sense of mission and a desire to complete the mission is incredibly strong. And that, in many cases, translates to the administrative personnel as well. Mm-hmm. To support those missions, they feel an identity with the mission, and you want that. Which also translates in, it's really tough to let go.
Mm-hmm.
And to say, this thing that I really believe in is important, but just simply not as important as these other things. And it's really tough to do that. What you're seeing now, I think, as an admission in the CFO community and across agencies as well, that it's not just whether it's important or not, or it's something we really should do or ought to do. It's we need to identify ourselves where we're going to go rather than have it happen to us.
Mm-hmm.
And when you see surveys and you talk to CFOs, the feeling isn't that it's, you know, some, we don't want to do this and we're going to fight it. It's, okay, it's inevitable that there are cuts coming. It's inevitable that we have to streamline. It's inevitable that we have to reduce. Okay, let's get ahead of that game. Let's plan for this. Let's the CFOs want a role in helping to figure out what should be done.
I'm encouraged to hear you say that, and I'll tell you why when we come back from the break. Our guest is Jim Taylor. He is the Chief Financial Officer at the Department of Labor. My colleague Jason Miller in as we talk about the Chief Financial Officer's survey of 2012 priorities when In-Depth with Francis Rose continues on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Mission goals through health, brought to you by General Dynamics IT.
A new study of the benefits of electronic health records finds some early anecdotal evidence of major savings. The analysis by Bloomberg Government examined early EHR adopters like the Veterans Health Administration, which realized more than $3 billion in net benefits over 10 years, and Sentara Healthcare, which achieved a $50 million annual return on the investment in their EHR system. And the University of Pittsburgh Children's Hospital cut its serious medication errors by 92%.
General Dynamics IT is meeting the challenges of a complex healthcare environment that requires far-reaching experience and full-spectrum capabilities. Government, military, and commercial health payer organizations rely on General Dynamics IT's health services, solutions, and support to tackle their toughest issues. General Dynamics IT's broad understanding of healthcare data, military health missions, fraud, waste, and abuse protection, and more ensures support and innovation tailored to your real-world needs. Today's healthcare challenges are formidable. To learn more, go to GDIT.com.
Arming your home security system gives you peace of mind, but are you paying $30, $40, $50 or more in monitoring fees? Switch to Ackerman Security Systems, the metro area's most trusted name in security, and pay just $18.95 a month. That's right, $18.95 a month, and no cost to switch. Don't have a system? Then Ackerman offers the latest technology, including wireless monitoring. Call by Wednesday and get 3 months of basic monitoring free when you switch or start service with Ackerman. Call 888-999-1070, AckermanSecurity.com.
You download the free applications for your iPhone or iPad or Android smartphone, and then you go to their network, and then it knows all of the infrared codes for these things, and it's got the programming for 500 models. And then once you download the specific details for the model of the equipment that you have, this remote control will control everything.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The Washington Capitals are bringing the excitement of hockey to local classrooms with Caps at School. Caps at School is a free online curriculum-enhancing teaching tool for grades 1 through 6 that uses the sport of hockey to teach science, math, language, art, health, and physical education. Teachers and students participating in Caps at School can also win visits from Capitals players and Slapshot teachers. For more information on how to enroll your class for free, visit capsatschool.com.
Tom Temin here with a preview of tomorrow's Federal Drive. The Yankee branch of the General Services Administration is showing the rest of the agency how to be a real skinflint when it comes to buying electricity. And we'll sift the politics out of the State of the Union speech and figure out what it means for federal employees and contractors. Those stories and more tomorrow morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We're in the executive suite today with Jim Taylor, the Chief Financial Officer at the Department of Labor. My colleague Jason Miller joining me as we talk about the 2012 priorities survey of the Chief Financial Officers community. And we got right to the point right at the top of this after collecting some information, Jason, about the people who were taking the survey, whether they were career or political, how long they've been in their positions, and so on. The priorities that we had listed, there were eight of them, Jim. And Jason pointed out something a moment ago off the air that we haven't seen in any of our other surveys, and that is that the top-ranked priority was very clear in this survey where it was muddled in all of the others. Number one by far, helping my agency deal with budget cuts. And it seems pretty obvious on the surface. And yet, when you look at some of these others, reducing improper payments, the administration's made a very concerted effort to do that. Modernizing grant systems, general ledger financial systems, procurement system. There are a lot of other things on this list that I think somebody could make a good case for being very high priorities, and yet this one was so clear-cut. What do you think when you see a result like that?
Well, I think in this case, it's a reflection of our times. Because of the recession and the budget deficit, there is a real need to look at where we're going to reduce. We're not going to get a reduction in the deficit and eliminate the deficit by increasing the size of government.
Mm-hmm.
That's simply not going to happen. I think everybody understands that. In addition, I think that when you see the top two categories, the second category is the helping my agents use financial data to make better decisions. I think that was number two on your list.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that fits in the discussion we were having before the break. And that is that we understand there's a problem. We want to use the information we have available. CFOs have access to that information. They have the analytics capability in order to help manage leadership make those decisions.
Mm-hmm.
So let's get ahead of this. Let's decide, based on analytical information, let's take a look at what is important and how we can make these programs either more effective or identify, whether they're effective at all.
I mentioned before the break that I was heartened to hear you talk about the fact that we want to get ahead of this curve. We want to be proactive about seeing where we need to cut and what we need to look at. The reason that I think that is good to hear is the approach that I've heard from Congress most often is, we're going to cut your budget by this percent. And that means that the good programs get cut by the same percent as the bad programs get cut, thereby killing them, essentially, because they become less effective. Talk about the process under which you go through. I mean, is it line by line, I guess, the way people talk about it rhetorically, and examine what's working and what's not to try to make those priorities and make those decisions about what is a candidate to stay and what is a candidate to go?
Well, I think the thing that impressed me most about coming to labor was that it had such an aggressive performance management system. The COO was our deputy secretary, and he literally drives this process.
Mm-hmm.
And no one in labor will tell you otherwise. But Seth Harris drives this process. And in an agency where the idea is to help workers, to protect your retirement benefits, things like that, and to give you accurate labor statistics, it would be easy to say, well, this is all a great good, and we ought to just do it all. But that's not how labor's approached it. And what we literally do is go through a very detailed process of identifying not only whether programs are working better than they are in terms of outcomes, not just outputs, not number of meetings we went to, although we do track number of inspections and things like that, but what happened?
Mm-hmm.
Because of the increased emphasis on worker safety, for example, in 2011, 200 more construction workers went home to their families than would have otherwise. We can demonstrate that.
Mm-hmm.
We've also gone through and identified how the budget increases we've received over the last couple of years have contributed to that and whether or not that's really the difference. And as it shakes out, it probably isn't the cause of it. It's really just people working on the right thing and focusing on the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
What also comes out of an analysis like that is our areas where, we dedicated more resources, but we're not really seeing much of a change. What does that mean? Is that something we really should go back and readdress, or things that simply don't work? So we have an aggressive performance management system. There's quarterly reviews the deputy secretary holds with every assistant secretary, and goes through all of their statistics, and so we do track those very carefully, and I think that's going to contribute to identifying what the priorities are.
When we have such clear-cut selections at the priorities at the top of the list, that also means we get pretty clear-cut ones at the bottom of the list. And I certainly don't mean to denigrate the importance of them, but I wonder if you might talk a little bit about why you think the choices of modernizing or improving my agency's grant systems and reducing my agency's real property inventories finished toward the bottom. Again, a lot of things, everything on this list important, but those turned out to be the least important of the folks that responded.
Yeah, I think the one that may surprise me a little bit is the property inventory, simply because that is a focus. There is a property reduction effort that OMB is pushing with the large agencies, the large property holding agencies, and there's really a concerted effort. It could be a reflection of the fact that that's underway. We've got that under control. Grants management, we get the grants out. You know, they get out the door, and so maybe things are working okay.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they're not as much on the radar screen as some of the other issues.
Yeah, I was going to say, how much overwhelming for in the CFO community, and I know you can't speak for everyone, but is the impending budget cuts, is the fear of the impending budget cuts that maybe is just taking up a lot of your time as a CFO, preparing, focusing, getting ready for it, versus being able to spend maybe more quality time on something like, okay, what do we need to do to improve our grant management system, just as an example?
Yeah, I think for many of the CFOs, I think there is a huge driver in terms of the requirements that are coming in terms of identifying and managing reductions in budgets. So, and everything you read in the press and everything we're asked about, those are the kinds of things that are going to be number one on the hit parade. There's no doubt.
Jim Taylor is the Chief Financial Officer at the Labor Department, our guest on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, my colleague Jason Miller, and I talking to him about our Chief Financial Officer's Federal Priority 2012 survey, and you can see all the results posted now on federalnewsradio.com. A reminder that we wrap up our 2012 Priority Survey Series next Tuesday at 3 o'clock with Shelley Metzenbaum of the Office of Management and Budget talking about our Performance Improvement Officer Survey. You can see the results of all the surveys now on federalnewsradio.com. We'll be back in a moment.
On November 17, 2011, the future of air and missile defense changed forever. MEADS, the Medium Extended Air Defense System, demonstrated the first ever over-the-shoulder launch against a simulated target. It was an unprecedented breakthrough and proved that only MEADS, with its 360-degree coverage, can defend our warfighters against air and missile defense threats from any direction. MEADS has the advanced capabilities and reliability that the 40-year-old Patriot system can't provide and will cost half as much to man and maintain versus upgrading Patriot. MEADS 360-degree coverage defends more area with fewer assets and has the lethality to defeat advanced threats. Defending more, costing less. MEADS. For more information, go to MEADS-AMD.com. That's MEADS-AMD.com.
Paid for by Lockheed Martin.
To win and deliver government contracts successfully, you need to align with the right teaming partners. Meet Tech Systems. While often behind the scenes, Tech Systems has worked with government agencies and systems integrators for over 25 years. In fact, every year, they deploy over 70,000 IT professionals at over 5,500 client sites nationwide, including more than 65 government agencies. Tech Systems is active across a broad spectrum of government programs and has developed deep relationships to understand what works well and who does it best. Thinking about cybersecurity, working on a cloud computing initiative. Tech Systems addresses critical program gaps related to people, projects, and work functions. Their delivery models scale from staff augmentation to IT project and outsourcing services to support transition, ramp-up, surge, and ongoing program support needs. Learn more at TechSystems.com, TEKSystems.com.
Are you looking to achieve results and improve organizational performance across sectors? The George Washington University Center for Excellence in Public Leadership and the College of Professional Studies offers a master's degree in public leadership with a specialization in multi-sector management. Earn Six Sigma certification and learn from scholar practitioners. Offered online with short-term residencies. Visit leadership-programs.org. That's leadership-programs.org.
The Echoing Argument. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Nicholas Garlow with HHS HealthBeat. If you argue with your family, your friends may be next. Researchers at UCLA recruited nearly 600 high school freshmen to keep a diary and checklist for 2 weeks, reporting on their daily activities. That included the times they argued and with whom. Andrew Fellini is a professor in the Department of Psychiatry and Psychology at UCLA.
Arguments in one relationship, for example, peer relationships, would predict having an argument with parents and other family members the next day and vice versa.
The effects were in some cases long-term.
Having an argument with your family predicted being more likely to have an argument with your friends not just the next day, but even 2 days later.
Preparation of the paper in the journal Child Development was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Nicholas Garlow.
The men and women of our National Guard and Reserve Forces are working hard on the battlefield and here at home. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve is working just as hard for them. For over 36 years, ESGR has paved the way for greater understanding between our Guard and Reserve Forces and their civilian employers, promoting a culture where all American employers support and honor the military service of their employees. Together, we all serve. To learn more, visit www.esgr.mil.
Listen each week for Tech Tuesday on Federal News Radio. Every Tuesday, we zero in on how technology inspires innovation. Tuesday mornings at 11, it's Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, the latest on products that help bring policy to life. Then Tuesday afternoons at 12:30, join Federal News Radio's Jason Miller for Ask the CIO. Hear from the top of the food chain on how your agency is using technology today. Tech Tuesday, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. You're in the executive suite, and today we're reviewing the results of our Chief Financial Officer's Survey 2012 priorities. And you can find the results and look them over anytime you want at federalnewsradio.com. Our guest, along with my colleague Jason Miller, is Jim Taylor. He is the Chief Financial Officer at the Labor Department. And a couple of the questions in our survey, Jim, revolved around workforce issues. The first question in that group was, my financial management workforce, blank. And the choices were, works hard but falls short in some necessary skills, 72.7%. Is that representative of what you find when you talk to your colleagues in this community?
Yeah, yes, it is. Francis, the problem we have is that our community and our requirements are changing drastically. We've all run out. We're trying to pick up financial systems, go to the cloud, whatever, and get more information and try to figure out how to make that information useful, not just produce financial statements, which no one ever reads, but actually to provide information to leadership, actionable information. In order to do that, we have a whole set of new requirements, and they're constantly evolving, as I mentioned. And it's tough to keep a workforce up to speed with that. At Labor, we just installed a financial management system, and we went from a 20-plus-year-old system, which everybody was very comfortable with, which provided a lot of data, but it was all data that was based on going out and doing a data call. You couldn't do dashboards very well. You couldn't get information you really needed that was actionable without a time lag.
It didn't push anything. You had to pull what you wanted.
Exactly. Okay. Absolutely. You had to go get it. But it was easy in that if you were processing something, you had a contract action, a grant, whatever, you threw it over the wall, and a couple days later it would come back and it would be fine, and you didn't care what went on the other side of that wall. You just toss it over there, and whatever happens, happens, and it comes back. Now we have a system which has four times as many users as the previous system, and it's instant feedback, positive or negative. If you don't do something correctly, you get the error message and nothing happens. And so you have to call the help desk. Things have to happen right there. You have to get help before anything can move. That's a huge cultural change, and a lot of agencies went through that earlier. In other places I've been, we went through it at Commerce when I was there, at FEMA when I was there. However, at Labor, we're just now doing that. This implementation has been going on for 3 years, and I would say that the two more difficult issues that we've had are old data, converting old data, and being able to use it going forward, and also that cultural change.
You talked about the idea of the workforce. It sounded like you were saying that just there's so much changing, they're having trouble keeping up,
sure.
and we're having trouble keeping them up. How do you personally, for your own self, how do you stay ahead of everything that's going on? Who do you rely on, or what do you rely on to help you stay ahead of what you need to be on top of?
Well, we try to stay very active in the community. And you know, the CFO community, like CIOs and CAOs, is actually a very small community when you get into it.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knows everybody pretty much, and you can find out information. So you try to keep on top of what's going on. You get active on the councils and the CFO council, in my case, and you make sure your staff is active as well, wherever possible, to find out what's going on, to keep up, go to the conferences, things like that. And then you're, of course, driven by what leadership's priorities are.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the difficult part. I wouldn't say that we stay ahead of it. I would say that we're struggling like everybody else, and mm-hmm. we're swamped. And I think the hardest part isn't what I can find out what's going on. It's being able to translate that into something that my staff needs to do
yeah.
and something they need to understand.
Yeah. That's the piece that I wanted to get to, is that it seems like that you would be in the same position as the folks that you're leading, and try and this is not you don't reach a point where mm-hmm. I finally know everything I need to know, that there's right. that it's a constant battle.
One of the things you mentioned when you talked workforce was the idea that things are changing. Are there skills, for instance, in the CFO community that are lacking, and that you'd say, you know, we really need people who mm-hmm. can do X, and whether it's business intelligence or data analysis? And then on the other hand, the other side of that spectrum is, are you guys seeing in the CFO community, if you will, the retirement tsunami that's coming, or the brain drain? Francis had spooky music. Yeah, I think he'd play it now. Are you getting that now? Are you seeing it now because we're hearing a lot about buyouts and retirements and people leaving? Or is it no different than maybe it's been over your career where you've seen people come and go?
Yeah, I think there really aren't that many more that I've seen than has been going on in my career. I think some turnover is positive. In our community, when someone leaves federal service, we see them in another capacity anyway. So no one ever seems to really leave the community. They just change hats.
Like i.e. the contractor.
That's right. Yeah, they change hats. Not that there's anything wrong with that. But I think that in our case, what we're really concerned about is trying to make sure that the staff has the skill sets that they need. And that is a combination of business analytics and the ability to do risk management, to do the kind of analysis that we need for risk management. Our assistant secretaries are craving actionable information, and that information isn't the grant accruals that I produce every year mm-hmm. for reporting.
I don't know why.
They
don't want to see the big number.
I can't imagine. And to my auditor, I apologize already because I have my entrance conference in a couple of weeks. But they're craving more information, more analytical information. And that's the skills we really do lack in our community. And that's what everybody's crying for.
And how much is that in the vendor community? Do they lack mm-hmm. the same skills? I mean, one thing, for instance, and again, I'm going to relate it back to the technology community. Cybersecurity is a good example. There's not enough of anybody who knows cyber. There's always a need. Is that the same thing mm-hmm. with risk management and business analytics?
Well, that's where we usually go to get it. And if I were to say that no one has it, then I'm going to get a lot of phone calls from my friends in the vendor community who are going to tell me, how they do it.
By the way, you will anyways now.
Yeah, that's right.
So I'm sorry.
But that's what we do. We get a lot of support from the vendor community. I think historically, too much support and not having the ability ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
But I think as we've done the insourcing initiative, I think that's changed a bit. But I really do think that that's the capability we really need, we really lack. And when you look at your survey, you know, and talk about the next number 8, the question on the biggest workforce challenge my office is training and hiring. It's those two together.
All right, let's talk about that some more when we come back from the break. That voice is the voice of Jim Taylor. He is the chief financial officer at the Labor Department, and the survey he referred to is our Survey 2012 Priorities. You can find it now on federalnewsradio.com. It's posted there for you to look at anytime you like, and we'll talk more about it when In Depth with Francis Rose continues.
Whether it's warfighters on a mission, a payload that must reach orbit, or sensitive data on your network and in cyberspace, protection is absolutely critical. Fortunately, Kinetic North America is there to help you assure mission success. They partner with their customers to develop innovative technology solutions for the challenges of national defense, homeland security, and information access. Discover how they can help you protect what's important at QINETIQ-MA.com. When it's critical, it's Kinetic North America.
Get ready for another exciting night of Navy men's basketball. See the midshipmen take on Patriot League rival Bucknell Saturday, January 28th at 7 p.m. in Alumni Hall. With a special halftime performance by the Air Elite Dunkers, it's affordable family fun right in your backyard. Tickets are $10 for adults, $5 for youth, and $3 for groups of 20 or more. Don't miss out on the action. See the Navy men's hoop team versus Bucknell Saturday, January 28th at 7 p.m. Order your tickets today at NavySports.com or by calling 1-800-US-4-NAVY.
Already this year, six federal agencies have offered buyouts or early retirements. Is your agency one of them? Check out federalnewsradio.com's buyout guide to see how slimmer budgets and changing priorities may be affecting you. Our buyout guide brings you the most up-to-date information on which agencies are offering buyouts, how many are offered, and who is eligible. Check it today and keep checking back for more information. Find it at federalnewsradio.com, search term buyouts.
Newsmakers, talk to Jason Miller.
Richard Spires is the Homeland Security Department's CIO.
In the 2012 appropriations bill, a congressman put in a provision asking you for a kind of a software inventory.
Well, it was interesting because I heard about that by listening to the program there on Fed News Radio, and I was like, oh, and my name popped up, and I was like, well, this is interesting. So we can always improve. We're a large organization. We use a lot of different software products.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive.
You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Jim Taylor is the Chief Financial Officer at the Labor Department. He's in studio with my colleague Jason Miller and I as we talk about the results of our 2012 priority survey for chief financial officers in the federal government. You mentioned a minute ago, Jim, the issues that agencies are having with hiring and training. Do you have a sense that some of the hiring reforms that OPM has instituted are helping? Are they enough? Are you getting the and finding and then able to keep the kinds of people that you need to do some of the specialized things that you and Jason were talking about before the break?
Well, I look at starting with the last first with retention. I look at retention a little differently depending on where I'm losing someone to. I mean, I have absolutely no problem if someone comes in and works with us for a few years and then ends up going to work for one of our agencies.
Mm-hmm.
As long as they're staying in the family, I'm happy. So I hopefully won't lose them outside the agency.
Mm-hmm.
But because there is such a need across all agencies and in all the departments. We are seeing an improvement in the hiring. I think these intern programs are absolutely wonderful, wonderful things. We established them when I was at Commerce. It was really successful. And at DOL, we've had a lot of success and a lot of support from our HR folks in creating and in bringing interns in. We've also found a couple of good devices to get people in a little bit quicker that OPM has supported. So there are things out there. It just takes a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
It's not quite as simple as one would hope. However, a friend of mine just went to work for the private sector, and they talk about 6-month time frame to go through the whole hiring process for some of the larger firms.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that it's the nature of a large bureaucratic organization to start with. I think for me, bringing people in hasn't been as hard because I was lucky in a lot of respects. When I came on board, there had been a number of retirements at key top-level positions, including the deputy CFO and the head of our financial systems. That wasn't in itself good, but what it did give me the opportunity to do was to bring in my team, bring in people that I would like to have in those positions, and I found two wonderful individuals to fill those jobs, and then it starts spreading,
mm-hmm.
because then they find other people, and then we go through a whole process, and what we do at Labor and in the CFO's office is insist that not only do we look at someone from the standpoint of their technical qualifications for the manager, But that person, before they come aboard at the 12, 13, 14, 15 level, has to meet with myself or my deputy, Karen Tech-Laborhan, in order to make sure it's the right attitude we want. We want a little bit of, we want some passion. Mm-hmm. We want someone who really wants to do really good things. And it makes for interesting in-house meetings mm-hmm. sometimes, but it really has paid off.
One of the things you talk about with hiring, what about training? Because I think that's the other piece to this. And you talk about risk management and business analytics. Is there enough training out there for the financial community? I know, for instance, we talked about the AGA, the Association of Government Accountants, does a lot mm-hmm. of those kind of courses. But is that enough? Is there more that the CFO community is or can do?
I think there's a lot of good training opportunities out there. I think the AGA does a lot of great training. They do a lot of webinars and web-based training, which is great. And all these other training entities out there are very helpful in providing the training. I think the tough part for the CFO community is making sure that we identify what kind of training is required. In my case, what we are really working towards is making sure that for every position, an individual doesn't just know what their qualifications are, but the kind of training they should have in order to really do that job at a fully successful level. And lay those out in very great detail so that if you want to be a GS-13 systems accountant, this is the kind of training you should have had. If you don't have that, you've got to get that. Mm-hmm. And we want to do that for every position in our office.
And quickly, I know we want to maybe jump into another subject, but do you have the funding for that training? I know you have all the funding because you're the CFO community and can make it rain. But let's be honest here. Do you really have the funding?
You never have enough funding. Put it that way. You never have enough to do what you'd like to do. But you can get creative in how you get that training. Like I say, you can do a lot of webinars. You can, if we have a lot, we don't, there's a big push against sending a lot of people to training conferences across the country. However, you can bring training in-house, and it can be more cost-effective to do that. And it also gives us the opportunity to train our clients in the agencies.
When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about some of the technology aspects of doing your job. Quickly, before we wrap up this segment, though, when you talk about hiring and retention and those kinds of issues, some of the mechanisms that you have in place, that says to me a strong relationship between you and the Chief Human Capital Officer is important. That takes me to the conversation that we've had with the other CFOs or CXOs, just talking about how important all of those relationships are. CIOs say all the time that are successful. I'm successful because I have a good partnership with my CFO and so on. Is that different than it's been in the past in federal government?
Absolutely. Absolutely. 20 years ago, a lot of these functions didn't exist, for mm-hmm. one thing. But I think just the nature of the beast. I mean, we all have such incredible challenges. The CIO's office has amazing challenges in terms of security and in terms of the complexity of what everybody's requiring. We all have similar customers, and our job is to give them the tools they need, be it HR, be it the Business Operations Center, which it does manages the facility, the mm-hmm. physical plant, mm-hmm. to the CIO's office. You know, those functions all have a similar goal, and that is to give the tools to the people who are going to actually accomplish the mission. So mm-hmm. I think we found we have to work together, and you see a lot more combinations of those functions in the same place or working a lot more closely together. I definitely have seen that.
We'll talk about some of those technology functions when we come back to wrap up our conversation with Jim Taylor, the Chief Financial Officer at the Labor Department, and talk about the results of our Survey 2012 priorities for the Chief Financial Officers community on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Back in a moment.
The Federal IT Challenge is a series exploring the administration's aim to fundamentally change how the federal government purchases and uses IT, and a discussion around one of the biggest goals, reducing the number of federal data centers by at least 40% by 2015. During the show, Doug Bourgeois, Vice President and Federal Chief Cloud Executive for VMware, commented.
Platform as a service is a critical layer in the cloud stack. Infrastructure as a service was only the first step towards towards the cloud. The platform enables agencies to develop, deploy, and use applications in more agile ways. It allows them to accelerate their time to value for mission applications and continue the savings journeys that they've already begun with their journey to infrastructure as a service in this difficult, constraining budget environment.
To hear the Federal IT Challenge in its entirety and learn more about the journey to cloud computing, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword VMware. That's federalnewsradio.com, keyword VMware.
As the government works to address the growing wave of cyber crime, one provider is leading the fight. Verizon stands as the first and only identity provider to achieve ICAM Level 3 approval. This enables Verizon to issue strong digital identity credentials that meet strict, predefined standards to government agencies, health organizations, and businesses. It's one way Verizon is leading the fight against identity theft and fraud. To find out more, visit verizonbusiness.com/identity. Identity.
The Financial Safari Radio Show features some of the best retirement planners from across the country and is your source for a common sense approach to planning for a secure retirement in Northern Virginia. Contact the father-daughter retirement planning team of Don and Jill O'Rourke at 1-800-664-7505.
Tune in to the Financial Safari with the father-daughter team of Don and Jill O'Rourke, Sunday mornings at 8 a.m. right here on 1500 WFED.
It is one of our most sophisticated drones, and Iran claims that it was hijacked using a flaw in the GPS guidance system. They got the drone to think that it was in Afghanistan when it was actually still in Iran, and so the drone landed at its home base, thinking it was home base, right, but actually it was in Iran.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
There are those who dedicate themselves to a sense of honor, to a life of courage, and a commitment to something greater than themselves. They have always defended this nation and each other. They still do. The few, the proud, the Marines.
This is Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. In this hour on the executive suite, my colleague Jason Miller and I are looking at the results of our 2012 priority survey in the chief financial officers community and government to help us understand the results. Jim Taylor, the CFO at the Labor Department, is here with us. One of the questions, Jim, in our survey was a little technologically oriented. How likely are you to move to a financial systems shared service provider in the coming year? Overwhelmingly, the response, not likely. 72, almost 73% of respondents responded in that way. Where are you at Labor on this one?
Well, we just went to the cloud with our financial system in January of 2010 mm-hmm. was when we went live. We're the first department to go to a cloud environment for a financial system. The dramatic change, and we talked about the cultural issues and the staffing issues and training issues, mm-hmm. well, that brought it all to a head. Because the whole department had to go from a very antiquated system to a cloud-based system that could be very robust, but you've got to know what you're doing with the information, and mm-hmm. you've got to understand that this is in real-time information.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe in the model. I've done it every way you can do it. At FEMA, we did a standalone. At Commerce, we got rid of a dozen different financial systems and combined them into one. And here at Labor, it was already centralized, so that made it a little bit easier. But the transition to the cloud was very challenging. I believe in the model. I think there are things that you have to be prepared for, and I think the department, when it signed the contract back in 2008, wasn't quite as prepared as it could have been,
mm-hmm.
and didn't plan this whole transition as well. It's hard to foresee what the issues are going to be. They thought that we were going to have something like one quarter of the number of users we have, which mm-hmm. created all kinds of issues, and we went live.
I was a little surprised by this result. 72% said not likely. There's a big push from the Bush administration, as you know well, to move financial management line of business, shared service providers. You had four of them in government. You had vendors who were starting to get on and become shared service providers. Even this administration, while they didn't talk about the for the first few years, is starting to talk about shared services. Why, from your experience, are CFOs maybe, and maybe it's the way we phrase the question, not this year. So maybe it's a 2-year or 3-year planning, but we're not doing it this year. Is this surprising to you that it's going to not happen so soon?
No, there are a number of financial systems implementation underway. What I think that reflects also is the fact that OMB has also really pushed back on these ERP approaches, the Big Bang theory that we're going to do everything all at once. The nature of our business drove many of us to do this over the years, and we kind of ended in this place, you know, got where we are now because of ourselves, because you figure you're not going to be able to get the money for this again in your lifetime, so you got to go for it now and get everything you can. And that's how we all kind of did it. And also, you could sell it in-house if you have an ERP approach, and you can solve the procurement problem, the HR problem, and the breakfast problem all at the same time.
And that just creates a whole set of new problems.
Absolutely.
Because ERPs are next to impossible for doing that. I've only
Absolutely.
Heard one or two really successful ones.
As we start to wrap up, Jim, what did we maybe not cover that we should be keeping our eyes on in 2012 and that your colleagues should be keeping their eyes on in 2012?
Well, one of the things the CFO Council this past year, and in fact in September, produced a report on the 20 years of the CFO Act. The Improper Payments Elimination and Recovery Act of 2010 required that we do this report in conjunction with the IG community. So John Reimer of FDIC, the IG there, and myself chaired the group. And the report that went over raised a number of issues, very similar to the kinds of things you're talking about and that others talk about. And the two key ones there are the role of the CFO, because the roles of the CFO are dramatically different across the government.
Mm-hmm.
And the evolving role of the CFO may be more towards a private sector model, and also the nature of the reporting model itself. And I think that's an area where it's not sexy, and people go to sleep quickly when I start talking about it, so I say goodbye to your listeners now. But it's the nature of why we do annual financial statements and why we do them the way we do them. No one wants less oversight. Well, no one wants oversight at all, but we're not asking for less oversight. We're saying that there's all kinds of issues related to internal controls and reporting and the challenges of technology and the challenges of the budget, that there's got to be a better way, and that maybe we ought to be able to sit down with a blank sheet of paper and talk and build up to what our reporting, our external reporting ought to be, rather than simply adding on.
Do you foresee Congress addressing that CFO responsibilities?
No time soon.
No time soon.